In less than a month, Chicago will be the site of a national conference on what is called Fair Chance Hiring. In this area, it's also referred to as second chance programs. The aim is to find gainful employment for people who've had run-ins with the law, whether it's arrests or prison. This week, we're going to look at the mission, the opportunities, and the challenges. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. Early next month, the corporate coalition of Chicago, the Harris School of Public Policy, and the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago will team up to produce a two-day conference. The conference is bringing together employers and nonprofits, policymakers, researchers, and benefactors. And the purpose of this conference is to look across the landscape of fair chance hiring and see where changes and new challenges may exist. And my guest this weekend to talk about that subject includes Steph Dolan, Fair Chance Hiring Program Manager for the Corporate Coalition of Chicago, Professor Sean Bushway, an expert on criminal justice and corrections with corrections reform with the State University of New York at Albany, and Dr. Matt Premack, president of Advocate Condell Medical Center in Libertyville. His hospital is a Fair Chance employer. And I thank all three of you for joining us. Steph Dolan, your coalition is helping to put on this conference for a topic that may not get as much attention in the public as it should. So please explain what Fair Chance Hiring is.
Yeah, of course. Happy to do that. Fair Chance Hiring is the practice of hiring individuals with criminal records. This term came about from the idea that an individual should get a fair chance at employment, despite mistakes that they may have made in the past. Criminal records can really hold people back from employment. Many companies have background check policies that prevent them from hiring people with prior convictions.
And I think that you have to also look at what kinds of barriers or what kinds of things can happen to people who do have criminal records, whether it's incarceration or not.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, so talk to me a little bit about that. Why so, it's important.
Yeah, so people face, you know, not just barriers with employment when they're reentering the workforce. Research shows that formerly incarcerated people are unemployed at a significantly higher rate than people who are not just as impacted. But there is an additional impact, not just on those individuals, but also on their families and on their communities. I had mentioned earlier that employers have background check practices, but also landlords do, colleges and universities. So there are these collateral consequences if you have a record, which means that your access to not just jobs, but also things like housing and education can all be impacted. And that ultimately impacts not just a family's economic stability and someone's upward mobility, but that of your community and that of the region in which an employer is working.
Matt Premack, Advocate Condell Medical Center employs those sometimes called ex-offenders. In the simple terms, the question is why and for how long have you been doing it?
Yeah, thanks, Craig. And thanks specifically for having this topic on your show. I think it's so important that we are bringing light to this for our broader communities to understand the benefits, understand some of the challenges, as we are seeing this growing across many of our large employers, not only in Chicago, but across the nation. So Advocate Health, which is our enterprise company name, 68 hospitals around the country, have been at this now for several years. We feel very strongly that this is not only an essential part of our workforce, but also a commitment that we can make to our community. And so when we think about health equity and we think about access, we not only think about that through the eyes of our patients, but also through the eyes of potential employees. And so we've been at this now for several years. We have many employees across all of our sites that have gone through this program. And probably, Craig, we'll get to in a bit talking more about what the program is. But we've been at this for many years and have seen tremendous success in many different areas through our Fair Chance Hiring program.
And Sean Bushway, Professor Bushway, how much of fair chance hiring involves myth busting?
Well, I mean, it starts with understanding that we're talking about a large number of people when you're talking about people with criminal records. I estimated that 30% of men by the time they're 35 will have at least one adult conviction. Forget about what happened when they were younger. So that's a lot of people that are going to be affected. And during tight labor markets like the one we're in now, I estimated that about 50% of the unemployed men will actually have a record of some type. And so if you're looking for workers, you're going to have to be dealing with people with records. You're going to see them in your labor force. And in fact, we know that, you know, 20 to 25% of the labor force has some type of conviction and is working productively. The good news is that one of the myths is wrong. The myth is everybody fails, and that's simply not true. Recidivism rates are wildly overinflated, the ones that are typically bandied about. And I've estimated that, you know, 70% of the people that have been convicted will never be convicted again. And so, you know, the good news is a lot of the people that are involved in the criminal justice system do it when they're young and they stop. And so, you know, there's a lot of people with records that will be perfectly good employees. And so it isn't the case that everybody with a record is going to be a risky and a bad employee. And so then the task becomes, how do you identify those folks with records who are going to be good employees? Because there are, in fact, plenty of people with records who are already working and could work more. So I think that myth that everybody fails and everybody's, you know, once a criminal, always a criminal is simply, you know, could not be more false. And you got to remember, it's not just a small subset of the population. It's a lot of people. And so being able to understand that and use that as a starting point, I think is super important for this discussion.
Indeed. Steph Dolan, give us an idea to follow up on what Matt Premack said, what the program is, what it's doing now.
Yeah. So the Corporate Coalition runs a cohort for employers who are interested in hiring fair chance talent. It runs for 9 months, and we bring these cohort members together to learn from each other about what they want to do. We share best practices, so they have the opportunity to hear about what good looks like when you're thinking about assessing your background check process or rethinking some of your retention strategies and the types of supports your company can offer. And then we also bring in companies who have done this and done it well, so that they can really act as exemplary companies for our cohort members to learn from them. And then finally, we offer coaching. We offer a one-on-one customized consulting for our cohort members so that they can get very specific guidance on practices that they may want to change within their companies. And we help them think through what needs to be changed and how to do it. We found that over the last 2 years that we've been working with our cohort members, there's been significant progress made within those organizations and being able to adapt their hiring and recruiting and retention practices to be able to, you know, more effectively support and advance this talent pool within their organizations.
Matt Premack, can you talk about the kinds of employees that you get through these kinds of efforts? I mean, obviously, if Advocate has been doing this for a while, you have a sense of what you're getting for your money.
Yeah, absolutely. And Craig, if I could just take a minute and maybe amplify something that Steph said before we go into where we're placing and what type of employees these look like. This program is absolutely essential for the success of a fair chance hiring model. And we've seen that because organizations have attempted this over the last decade or two, and they've done it simply as a hiring practice. And the hiring practice of fair chance hiring doesn't necessarily work. It really requires a model program around the hiring to make sure that these folks that are brought into an organization are successful. And so we've seen over the course of time that we've had large organizations, HR departments, legal departments, compliance departments, risk departments have all voiced concern about these large employers bringing this hiring practice into their organization. And we found that when they do implement the model program, we see very strong retention. We see very strong performance of these Fair Chance Hiring program participants. And so over time, we're seeing more adaptation and adoption of this program because of the success based on the program that Steph was talking about. Now, where in healthcare have we predominantly placed these folks? We've put them into mostly non-patient facing roles. So environmental services, facilities, food services, IT, other types of roles that often start as an entry-level role that requires, we would say, on the lighter side of pre-employment training. We often do on-the-job training as often part of the program. And we see these folks not only really demonstrate success in their role, but often aspire for then additional migration in through the healthcare industry, whether it's into clinical roles or clinical training. So they often start on the clinical side in non-patient facing. Now, through the coalition, we've also learned about the non-healthcare industries that have embarked on Fair Chance Hiring. They often tend to have a similar practice where these are more behind the scenes or offstage type roles that then migrate into more of the customer facing roles as they go through their time of employment.
Steph Dolan, can you talk about how the training part of it? I'm assuming that there are ways of doing it wrong. I mean, you know, just as Matt Premack said, just hiring is just one step. But what are the kinds of extra attention that such people might need?
Yeah, hiring, to Matt's point, is just the first step in making this happen. We talk a lot in our cohort about retention strategies, right? How do you get people to actually stay at a company for an extended period of time? Is that something, what types of supports do you offer? How are you thinking about access to transportation, childcare, uniforms? How are you thinking about mental health support, general health support? Are you providing professional development opportunities? And so we help our cohort members think about which of these like wraparound supports do you currently offer? Which ones do you think you should be adding to your repertoire? And do you want to be offering those internally, or would you think about outsourcing them? The other thing that we frequently bring up is the importance of partnering with local community organizations who can help you not just recruit this talent pool, but in many instances, help you support this talent pool as well. And so that's why, as part of our cohort model, we partner with CARA Plus, as well as the Chicagoland Workforce Funder Alliance. These are both organizations deeply embedded in the workforce ecosystem within Chicago. And so we're able to bring a lot of their expertise to bear as we're delivering our cohort programming to our members.
Professor Bushway, what kind of things do companies need to know for them to want to participate? Because I would assume another struggle may be getting more companies to want to do that hiring, as you know, some legal departments are going to worry about liability or retention and such.
Now, sometimes the conversation of Fair Chance is often focused on people that may be just coming out of prison or recently on probation. And actually, this is a much broader conversation than that, because there are lots of people with records that have difficulty getting jobs or getting promoted once they have a job simply because of their record. And so the good news there is that almost every company I've ever worked with, and I've consulted with a number of them, including some in Chicago, about their background check policy, hire people with criminal history records. They, you know, may have a restriction of certain types of crime, or they may have a certain limit. You have to be, you know, longer than 5 years, or certain characteristics of that. But I have yet to see an employer that doesn't hire people with records, often people with felony records. So the question isn't, should they start hiring? The question is, should they hire more? You know, if they're willing to talk, you know, if they're having good luck with the people that they hire that had been, you know, 5 years ago, what about 4 years ago if they see additional evidence? And so I don't really think this is about getting them comfortable with hiring people with records. Everybody, for the most part, does already. The question is hiring more people with records and learning from the experience that you already have, in my opinion, and finding ways to broaden the pool of workers that you can hire. Because, you know, it is, in fact, a limiting factor for a lot of companies that when they say, oh, we can't hire certain types of people. And, you know, one of the things that I, you know, once I point out that you're already hiring people with records, I ask them to think more carefully about the people they're not hiring. And one of the key things they're not hiring is people based on their type of crime, and you know, serious, violent, or something. And one of the facts of criminology, which is counter this logic, is that type of crime doesn't predict much. There are three things that predict whether you're going to be still an active criminal in terms of your criminal history record. It's how many crimes have you committed, what your current age is, and the time since your last crime or conviction. And type of crime is simply not predictive. Offenders are not specialists; they're generalists, and so we tend to think that it is. It's a hindsight bias, it's called by psychologists. But you know, if I can help employers with anything, it's de-emphasizing the role of type of crime and making their decisions. At least in terms of discerning risk, it's just simply not helpful.
And I want to talk a little bit more about that, but first to remind our listeners that you are listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Dullimore, and we're talking about fair chance or second chance hiring of people who've been incarcerated or have criminal records in otherwise through the justice system. My guests are Steph Dolan, Program Manager for the Corporate Coalition of Chicago, Professor Sean Bushway from SUNY, the State University of New York at Albany, and Dr. Matt Premack, President of Advocate Condell Medical Center in Libertyville. I guess, you know, I was surprised to hear you say, Professor, that there aren't as many employers who simply aren't hiring people with criminal records. Steph Dolan, have we really gotten past that stage where a criminal record or just checking the box that you've, you know, had a felony conviction, it means you walk out the door immediately?
So I would say that companies have different levels of risk tolerance. Some of them are more comfortable hiring individuals with records or all manner, right? And so they're further along in their fair chance hiring journey. And then others are not as far along or are highly regulated. You know, Matt operates in a very highly regulated industry within healthcare. We've had cohort members in the financial services industry that is also highly regulated. And so if you have a criminal record, it can be harder to get certain types of roles within those highly regulated industries. That being said, you know, like we also work with many employers in our cohort who do hire individuals with records, but what they want to do, this is to Sean's point, is figure out how to open the door wider to let more talent in. And they're thinking, you know, how can we adapt our background check process to be able to really listen to someone's story, learn more about their background, and then think about how that intersects with the role or not that they've applied for.
And how can, I mean, I think a lot of people maybe think of the background check as the thing that they're worried about. How can a background check be more helpful? Well, you know, what are the few, if present or future best practices that could make it more of an information as opposed to a bar that has to be cleared?
Yeah, one of our previous cohort members has a really great model where they've actually taken, instead of outsourcing their background check process to a third-party vendor, they've brought it all in-house. And so they have a team that is fully equipped and also trauma-informed to have these conversations with applicants once they've gotten that conditional offer, to better understand, you know, let's go through your background check process. Let's understand what your prior conviction was. Let's understand what the circumstances were around that. Let's talk about any rehabilitation efforts that you've gone through since then. Let's talk about any work history you've had since. And so it's really getting a better sense of the individual holistically, so that you can really start to understand how or where their background may or may not impact the work that they're going to be doing. And I think Sean has also done a lot of work in this space and has some really good tips for employers as well about the things that they should be thinking about as they assess whether or not they should bring someone on board.
I mean, it's worth mentioning that it's worth mentioning that Illinois is one of the few states that has specific rules, a law about this that was passed in 2021, the Employee Background Fairness Act, which, you know, says you can, that employers must perform an individualized assessment, considering a number of things, the length of time since conviction, the number of convictions in the record, the facts or circumstances surrounding the conviction, the age of the person at the time of the conviction, and efforts, evidence of rehabilitation efforts, because we know lots of people desist. And the issue is, are they on this pathway to desistance? Are they participating in programs and doing things like that? Because, and that's very clearly, people who are participating in these programs, have had prior employment, are much better off. And so, you know, Illinois is one of the three states that I know of that has this rule that says you have to go through this process. And I think that's very good policy. And I think, you know, employers are, I think, learning how to adapt to these new rules by having a more thorough process of evaluating. And, you know, the law says you can't just have a barrier that says anybody with a conviction is can't be hired. I mean, it has to be a more detailed analysis than that. And I think that's a very good thing.
Yeah. And I would point out, even though we're not talking about it, Illinois also has laws about housing and that it shouldn't be a barrier there either. Dr. Premack, I want to, since you're closer to the ground level where you're seeing people who are working for you, do you see success stories? Because I know, DuPage County has a program that deals with people who've had drug-related offenses, and I've talked to some of the people there, and I've seen stories of people who sometimes endured outrageously long commutes to make sure that they show up at work on time, or, you know, even long walks. Do you see evidence at your level where people really, really want these jobs and are willing to do whatever it takes to be good employees?
Yeah, absolutely, Craig. You know, we've gone through a pretty significant transition in just our workforce dynamics post-COVID. What employees are looking for, what makes a good job for folks. And we have at Advocate, and I know many of the other healthcare institutions in Chicago, thought very deeply about what does a good job look like and why would somebody want to be in that role. And we do see across our city, again, whether it's an Advocate or any of our other health institutions, that our Fair Chance hiring employees really do go above and beyond. They feel committed, they feel appreciative, they're hardworking. And like we said earlier, the retention of these folks is typically very high. And there is often an interest and almost a subtle drive that we may not see in other employees, that they say, I want to do good, I want to get back into the workforce, I want to provide for my family. I want to have secure housing and secure food. I want to create a future. And it's so rewarding to see these folks come into a role that they may not have ever anticipated, or at least in the last few years anticipated they would have, and create not only joy for them and their families, but for even their coworkers to be in that position.
Next month's summit is also going to be looking at changes in practices and policies. I know you, Steph Dolan, you've hinted at some of those, but what are the kinds of changes that we should be looking at or looking for?
Yeah, I touched on this earlier, just in terms of like employers thinking through what are some of their practices when it comes to background check, what are some of their practices when it comes to recruiting, what are some of their practices when it comes to retention? I think all of those are practices that we'll be digging into more during the conference in October. We have a whole session that's focused on what's working and what's not working and how can we tell, right? Starting to quantify what some of the impacts are of the various incredible programs that are out there, and trying to get a good sense on like truly is what practices are most effective. And if we can get the data to back that, then how do we roll out some of those practices more broadly across employers nationally?
Are we seeing mental health come more to the fore for these kinds of things?
Yep. Mental health is definitely one of the areas of sort of support that many employers who focus on this talent pool are digging into. Our cohort members, both last year and this year, have indicated a significant interest in being able to better understand what it means to be a trauma-informed work environment, how to ensure that managers and colleagues are trauma-informed as well, and thinking about how do you talk about this even from, you know, onboarding? How do you talk about this from the beginning of an employee's relationship with your company so that folks understand that mental health is something that is, you know, sort of at the core of your support offerings? How do you embed that at a really early stage that people feel comfortable bringing up challenges they have and also know what supports exist so that they know how to access them?
And for any of you, is there any more that government can or should be doing to make this work, to make these programs better or make it easier to have these programs?
There's going to be a panel on that as well, talking about government incentives to wage subsidies that are currently available through the federal government for people recently released from prison, and whether that's effective and whether what could be done to make it more effective. There's also a fair, there's a bond that the federal government makes available for the first year of employment that if you're worried that there's going to be some, you have a higher rate of theft, the government says, hey, we'll give you a bond. So maybe, and that seems to have some impact on people's willingness to hire, but it's not used very much. And maybe it could be used more broadly. So I think there's, you know, there is a good discussion about people on the margin, you know, who might not otherwise be hired. But I also think that, you know, a lot of the conversation just needs to be on recognizing that there's a lot of people that aren't risky that could be hired now, and changing some ideas, you know, that there's no need for government incentives. They just need to understand what their true chances of success are. And there's plenty of evidence that people with records can be successful and companies can successfully identify them and work with them.
Well, and I assume having discussions like this and discussions like what you're going to have next month are one way to change those attitudes. Right, Steph Dolan?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And I think one of the other areas that our cohort focuses on is, to Sean's earlier point, like around myth busting and what are some of those misperceptions. The people who are participating in our cohort are bought in, but they often need support in continuing to get buy-in within their organization and cascading fair chance hiring as a talent strategy further within their org.
Thank you very much. That is Steph Dolan from the Corporate Coalition of Chicago. My thanks also to Professor Sean Bushway from SUNY Albany and Dr. Matt Premack, president of Advocate Condell Medical Center, for spending this half hour with us. To our listeners, if you'd like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website, wbbmnewsradio.com. There's a link on the homepage. You can also find our podcasts on odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM. In less than a month, Chicago will be the site of a national conference on what is called fair chance hiring. In this area, it's also referred to as second chance programs. The aim is to find gainful employment for people who've had run-ins with the law, whether it's arrests or prison. This week, we're going to look at the mission, the opportunities, and the challenges. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. Early next month, the Corporate Coalition of Chicago, the Harris School of Public Policy, and the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago will team up to produce a two-day conference. The conference is bringing together employers and nonprofits, policymakers, researchers, and benefactors. And the purpose of this conference is to look across the landscape of fair chance hiring and see where changes and new challenges may exist. And my guest this weekend to talk about that subject includes Steph Dolan, Fair Chance Hiring Program Manager for the Corporate Coalition of Chicago, Professor Sean Bushway, an expert on criminal justice and corrections with corrections reform with the State University of New York at Albany, and Dr. Matt Premack, president of Advocate Condell Medical Center in Libertyville. His hospital is a Fair Chance employer. And I thank all three of you for joining us. Steph Dolan, your coalition is helping to put on this conference for a topic that may not get as much attention in the public as it should. So please explain what Fair Chance Hiring is.
Yeah, of course. Happy to do that. Fair Chance Hiring is the practice of hiring individuals with criminal records. This term came about from the idea that an individual should get a fair chance at employment, despite mistakes that they may have made in the past. Criminal records can really hold people back from employment. Many companies have background check policies that prevent them from hiring people with prior convictions.
And I think that you have to also look at what kinds of barriers or what kinds of things can happen to people who do have criminal records, whether it's incarceration or not.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, so talk to me a little bit about that. Why so, it's important.
Yeah, so people face, you know, not just barriers with employment when they're reentering the workforce. Research shows that formerly incarcerated people are unemployed at a significantly higher rate than people who are not just as impacted. But there is an additional impact, not just on those individuals, but also on their families and on their communities. I had mentioned earlier that employers have background check practices, but also landlords do, colleges and universities. So there are these collateral consequences if you have a record, which means that your access to not just jobs, but also things like housing and education can all be impacted. And that ultimately impacts not just a family's economic stability and someone's upward mobility, but that of your community and that of the region in which an employer is working.
Matt Premack, Advocate Condell Medical Center employs those sometimes called ex-offenders. In the simple terms, the question is why and for how long have you been doing it?
Yeah, thanks, Craig. And thanks specifically for having this topic on your show. I think it's so important that we are bringing light to this for our broader communities to understand the benefits, understand some of the challenges, as we are seeing this growing across many of our large employers, not only in Chicago, but across the nation. So Advocate Health, which is our enterprise company name, 68 hospitals around the country, have been at this now for several years. We feel very strongly that this is not only an essential part of our workforce, but also a commitment that we can make to our community. And so when we think about health equity and we think about access, we not only think about that through the eyes of our patients, but also through the eyes of potential employees. And so we've been at this now for several years. We have many employees across all of our sites that have gone through this program. And probably, Craig, we'll get to in a bit talking more about what the program is. But we've been at this for many years and have seen tremendous success in many different areas through our Fair Chance Hiring program.
And Sean Bushway, Professor Bushway, how much of Fair Chance Hiring involves myth busting?
Well, I mean, it starts with understanding that we're talking about a large number of people when you're talking about people with criminal records. I estimated that 30% of men by the time they're 35 will have at least one adult conviction. Forget about what happened when they were younger. And so that's a lot of people. that are going to be affected. And during tight labor markets like the one we're in now, I estimated that about 50% of the unemployed men will actually have a record of some type. And so if you're looking for workers, you're going to have to be dealing with people with records. You're going to see them in your labor force. And in fact, we know that, you know, 20 to 25% of the labor force has some type of conviction and is working productively. The good news is that one of the myths is wrong. The myth is everybody fails, and that's simply not true. Recidivism rates are wildly overinflated, the ones that are typically bandied about. And I've estimated that, you know, 70% of the people that have been convicted will never be convicted again. And so, you know, the good news is a lot of the people that are involved in the criminal justice system do it when they're young and they stop. And so, you know, there's a lot of people with records that will be perfectly good employees. And so, it isn't the case that everybody with a record is going to be a risky and a bad employee. And so then the task becomes, how do you identify those folks with records who are going to be good employees? Because there are, in fact, plenty of people with records who are already working and could work more. So I think that myth that everybody fails and everybody's, you know, once a criminal, always a criminal is simply, you know, could not be more false. And you got to remember, it's not just a small subset of the population. It's a lot of people. And so being able to understand that and use that as a starting point, I think is super important for this discussion.
Indeed. Steph Dolan, give us an idea of to follow up on what Matt Premack said, what the program is, what it's doing now.
So the Corporate Coalition runs a cohort for employers who are interested in hiring Third Chance Talent. It runs for 9 months, and we bring these cohort members together to learn from each other about what they want to do. We share best practices, so they have the opportunity to hear about what good looks like when you're thinking about assessing your background check process or rethinking some of your retention strategies and the types of supports your company can offer. And then we also bring in companies who have done this and done it well, so that they can really act as exemplary companies for our cohort members to learn from them. And then finally, we offer coaching. We offer a one-on-one customized consulting for our cohort members so that they can get very specific guidance on practices that they may want to change within their companies. And we help them think through what needs to be changed and how to do it. We found that over the last 2 years that we've been working with our cohort members, there's been significant progress made within those organizations and being able to adapt their hiring and recruiting and retention practices to be able to, you know, more effectively support and advance this talent pool within their organizations.
Matt Premack, can you talk about the kinds of employees that you get through these kinds of efforts? I mean, obviously, if Advocate has been doing this for a while, you have a sense of what you're getting for your money.
Yeah, absolutely. And Craig, if I could just take a minute and maybe amplify something that Steph said before we go into where we're placing and what type of employees these look like. This program is absolutely essential for the success of a fair chance hiring model. And we've seen that because organizations have attempted this over the last decade or two, and they've done it simply as a hiring practice. And the hiring practice of fair chance hiring doesn't necessarily work. It really requires a model program around the hiring to make sure that these folks that are brought into an organization are successful. And so we've seen over the course of time that we've had large organizations, HR departments, legal departments, compliance departments, risk departments have all voiced concern about these large employers bringing this hiring practice into their organization. And we found that when they do implement the model program, we see very strong retention. We see very strong performance of these fair chance hiring program participants. And so over time, we're seeing more adaptation and adoption of this program because of the success based on the program that Steph was talking about. Now, where in healthcare have we predominantly placed these folks? We've put them into mostly non-patient facing roles. So environmental services, facilities, food services, IT, other types of roles that often start as an entry-level role that requires, we would say, on the lighter side of pre-employment training. We often do on-the-job training as often part of the program. And we see these folks not only really demonstrate success in their role, but often aspire for then additional migration in through the healthcare industry, whether it's into clinical roles or clinical training. So they often start on the clinical side in non-patient facing. Now, through the coalition, we've also learned about the non-healthcare industries that have embarked on Fair Chance Hiring. They often tend to have a similar practice where these are more behind the scenes or offstage type roles that then migrate into more of the customer facing roles as they go through their time of employment.
Steph Dolan, can you talk about how the training part of it? I'm assuming that there are ways of doing it wrong. I mean, you know, just as Matt Premack said, just hiring is just one step. But what are the kinds of extra attention that such people might need?
Yeah, hiring, to Matt's point, is just the first step in making this happen. We talk a lot in our cohort about retention strategies, right? How do you get people to actually stay at a company for an extended period of time? Is that something, what types of supports do you offer? How are you thinking about access to transportation, childcare, uniforms? How are you thinking about mental health support, general health support? Are you providing professional development opportunities? And so we help our cohort members think about which of these like wraparound supports do you currently offer? Which ones do you think you should be adding to your repertoire? And do you want to be offering those internally, or would you think about outsourcing them? The other thing that we frequently bring up is the importance of partnering with local community organizations who can help you not just recruit this talent pool, but in many instances, help you support this talent pool as well. And so that's why, as part of our cohort model, we partner with CARA Plus, as well as the Chicagoland Workforce Funder Alliance. These are both organizations deeply embedded in the workforce ecosystem within Chicago. And so we're able to bring a lot of their expertise to bear as we're delivering our cohort programming to our members.
Professor Bushway, what kind of things do companies need to know for them to want to participate? Because I would assume another struggle may be getting more companies to want to do that hiring, as you know, some legal departments are going to worry about liability or retention and such.
Now, sometimes the conversation of Fair Chance is often focused on people that may be just coming out of prison or recently on probation. And actually, this is a much broader conversation than that, because there are lots of people with records that have difficulty getting jobs or getting promoted once they have a job simply because of their record. And so the good news there is that almost every company I've ever worked with, and I've consulted with a number of them, including some in Chicago, about their background check policy, hire people with criminal history records. They, you know, may have a restriction of certain types of crime, or they may have a certain limit. You have to be, you know, longer than 5 years, or certain characteristics of that. But I have yet to see an employer that doesn't hire people with records, often people with felony records. So the question isn't, should they start hiring? The question is, should they hire more? You know, if they're willing to talk, you know, if they're having good luck with the people that they hire that had been, you know, 5 years ago, what about 4 years ago, if they see additional evidence? And so I don't really think this is about getting them comfortable with hiring people with records. Everybody, for the most part, does already. The question is, hiring more people with records and learning from the experience that you already have, in my opinion, and finding ways to broaden the pool of workers that you can hire, because it is in fact a limiting factor for a lot of companies that when they say, oh, we can't hire certain types of people. And one of the things that I once I point out that you're already hiring people with records, I ask them to think more carefully about the people they're not hiring. And one of the key things they're not hiring is people based on their type of crime and, serious violent or something. And one of the facts of criminology, which is counter this logic, is that type of crime doesn't predict much. There are three things that predict whether you're going to be still an active criminal in terms of your criminal history record. It's how many crimes have you committed, what your current age is, and the time since your last crime or conviction. And type of crime is simply not predictive. Offenders are not specialists, they're generalists. And so we tend to think that it is. It's a hindsight bias, it's called, by psychologists. But if I can help employers with anything, it's de-emphasizing the role of type of crime and making their decisions. At least in terms of discerning risk, it's just simply not helpful.
And I want to talk a little bit more about that, but first to remind our listeners that you are listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Dullimore, and we're talking about fair chance or second chance hiring of people who've been incarcerated or have criminal records in otherwise through the justice system. My guests are Steph Dolan, Program Manager for the Corporate Coalition of Chicago, Professor Sean Bushway from SUNY, the State University of New York at Albany, and Dr. Matt Premack, President of Advocate Condell Medical Center in Libertyville. I was surprised to hear you say, Professor, that there aren't as many employers who simply aren't hiring people with criminal records. Steph Dolan, have we really gotten past that stage where a criminal record or just checking the box that you've, had a felony conviction, it means you walk out the door immediately?
So I would say that companies have different levels of risk tolerance. Some of them are more comfortable hiring individuals with records or all manner, right? And so they're further along in their fair chance hiring journey. And then others are not as far along or are highly regulated. Matt operates in a very highly regulated industry within healthcare. We've had cohort members in the financial services industry that is also highly regulated. And so if you have a criminal record, it can be harder to get certain types of roles within those highly regulated industries. That being said, we also work with many employers in our cohort who do hire individuals with records, but what they want to do, this is to Sean's point, is figure out how to open the door wider to let more talent in. And they're thinking, how can we adapt our background check process to be able to really listen to someone's story, learn more about their background, and then think about how that intersects with the role or not that they've applied for.
And how can, I think a lot of people maybe think of the background check as the thing that they're worried about. How can a background check be more helpful? Well, what are the few, if present or future best practices that could make it more of an information as opposed to a bar that has to be cleared?
Yeah, one of our previous cohort members has a really great model where they've actually taken, instead of outsourcing their background check process to a third-party vendor, they've brought it all in-house. And so they have a team that is fully equipped and also trauma-informed to have these conversations with applicants once they've gotten that conditional offer, to better understand, let's go through your background check process. Let's understand what your prior conviction was. Let's understand what the circumstances were around that. Let's talk about any rehabilitation efforts that you've gone through since then. Let's talk about any work history you've had since. And so it's really getting a better sense of the individual holistically so that you can really start to understand how or where their background may or may not impact the work that they're going to be doing. And I think Sean has also done a lot of work in this space and has some really good tips for employers as well about the things that they should be thinking about as they assess whether or not they should bring someone on board.
I mean, it's worth mentioning that it's worth mentioning that Illinois is one of the few states that has specific rules, a law about this that was passed in 2021, the Employee Background Fairness Act, which says you can that employers must perform an individualized assessment, considering a number of things: the length of time since conviction, the number of convictions in the record, the facts or circumstances surrounding the conviction, the age of the person at the time of the conviction, and evidence of rehabilitation efforts, because we know lots of people desist. And the issue is, are they on this pathway to desistance? Are they participating in programs and doing things like that? And that's very clearly people who are participating in these programs, have had prior employment, are much better off. And so, Illinois is one of the three states that I know of that has this rule that says you have to go through this process. And I think that's very good policy. And I think, employers are, learning how to adapt to these new rules by having a more thorough process of evaluating. And, the law says you can't just have a barrier that says anybody with a conviction is can't be hired. I mean, it has to be a more detailed analysis than that. And I think that's a very good thing.
Yeah, and I would point out, even though we're not talking about it, Illinois also has laws about housing and that it shouldn't be a barrier there either. Dr. Premack, I want to, since you're closer to the ground level where you're seeing people who are working for you, do you see success stories? Because I know... DuPage County has a program that deals with people who've had drug-related offenses, and I've talked to some of the people there, and I've seen stories of people who sometimes endured outrageously long commutes to make sure that they show up at work on time, or even long walks. Do you see evidence at your level where people really, really want these jobs and are willing to do whatever it takes to be good employees?
Yeah, absolutely, Craig. We've gone through a pretty significant transition in just our workforce dynamics post-COVID. What employees are looking for, what makes a good job for folks. And we have at Advocate, and I know many of the other healthcare institutions in Chicago, thought very deeply about what does a good job look like and why would somebody want to be in that role. And we do see across our city, again, whether it's an Advocate or any of our other health institutions, that our fair chance hiring employees really do go above and beyond. They feel committed, they feel appreciative, they're hardworking. And like we said earlier, the retention of these folks is typically very high. And there is often an interest and almost a subtle drive that we may not see in other employees, that they say, I want to do good, I want to get back into the workforce, I want to provide for my family, I want to have secure housing and secure food, I want to create a future. And it's so rewarding to see these folks come into a role that they may not have ever anticipated, or at least in the last few years anticipated they would have, and create not only joy for them and their families, but for even their coworkers to be in that position.
Next month's summit is also going to be looking at changes in practices and policies. I know you, Steph Dolan, you've hinted at some of those, but what are the kinds of changes that we should be looking at or looking for?
Yeah, I touched on this earlier, just in terms of like employers thinking through what are some of their practices when it comes to background check, what are some of their practices when it comes to recruiting, what are some of their practices when it comes to retention? I think all of those are practices that we'll be digging into more during the conference in October. We have a whole session that's focused on what's working and what's not working and how can we tell, right? Starting to quantify what some of the impacts are of the various incredible programs that are out there. And trying to get a good sense on, like, truly is what practices are most effective. And if we can get the data to back that, then how do we roll out some of those practices more broadly across employers nationally?
Are we seeing mental health come more to the fore for these kinds of things?
Yep, mental health is definitely one of the areas of sort of support that many employers who focus on this talent pool are digging into. Our cohort members, both last year and this year, have indicated a significant interest in being able to better understand what it means to be a trauma-informed work environment, how to ensure that managers and colleagues are trauma-informed as well. And thinking about how do you talk about this even from, onboarding? How do you talk about this from the beginning of an employee's relationship with your company so that folks understand that mental health is something that is, sort of at the core of your support offerings? How do you embed that at a really early stage that people feel comfortable bringing up challenges they have and also know what supports exist so that they know how to access them?
And for any of you, is there any more that government can or should be doing to make this work, to make these programs better or make it easier to have these programs?
There's going to be a panel on that as well, talking about government incentives to wage subsidies that are currently available to the federal government for people recently released from prison, and whether that's effective and whether what could be done to make it more effective. There's also a fair there's a bond that the federal government makes available for the first year of employment that if you're worried that there's going to be some, you have a higher rate of theft, the government says, hey, we'll give you a bond. So maybe, and that seems to have some impact on people's willingness to hire, but it's not used very much. And maybe it could be used more broadly. So I think there is a good discussion about people on the margin, who might not otherwise be hired. But I also think that, a lot of the conversation needs to be on recognizing that there's a lot of people that aren't risky that could be hired now, and changing some ideas, that there's no need for government incentives. They just need to understand what their true chances of success are. And there's plenty of evidence that people with records can be successful and companies can successfully identify them and work with them.
Well, and I assume having discussions like this, and discussions like what you're going to have next month are one way to change those attitudes. Right, Steph Dolan.
Yeah, exactly. And I think one of the other areas that our cohort focuses on is to Sean's earlier point, like around myth busting and what are some of those misperceptions. The people who are participating in our cohort are bought in, but they often need support in continuing to get buy-in within their organization and cascading fair chance hiring as a talent strategy further within their org.
Thank you very much. That is Steph Dolan from the Corporate Coalition of Chicago. My thanks also to Professor Sean Bushway from SUNY Albany and Dr. Matt Premack, President of Advocate Condell Medical Center, for spending this half hour with us. To our listeners, if you'd like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website, wbbmnewsradio.com. There's a link on the homepage. You can also find our podcasts on odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.